You're listening to the Clutter Fairy Weekly, a weekly webcast and podcast brought to you by the Clutter Fairy in Houston, Texas. If you'd like to participate in one of our live webcasts, please visit cfhou.com/weekly. You'll find a calendar of upcoming webcasts, as well as instructions for joining the Zoom meeting via the app or by phone. We'd love to see you. That URL again is cfhou.com/weekly. Now here's the weekly episode. Enjoy.
Hi, Clutter Fairy fans. This is the Clutter Fairy Weekly for August 15th, 2023. I'm your co-host, Ed Gumnick, and I'm speaking with Gail Goddard, certified professional organizer and owner of the Clutter Fairy in Houston, Texas.
Hi, everybody. The Clutter Fairy Weekly is the webcast and podcast that digs deep into the clutter that piles up between you and the life that you want to be living. We explore the habits and behaviors that lead to clutter, and we suggest strategies to slow the accumulation, reduce the collection, and comfortably manage the stuff we decide to keep.
If you're new to our Zoom meeting, or even just new to Zoom, we want to let you know that you can share your comments and questions via the chat feature, and I'll try to make sure Gail addresses them before we move on to another topic. You could also use the raise hand feature if you'd like to make a comment or ask a question yourself via audio or video. And we're streaming the webcast live on Facebook, so you can share your questions and comments there, and I'll share them with Gail. We're going to start, as we usually do, by talking about last week's weekly tittle, which was called Harvest Fallen Fruit. The assignment was to take action to address your florage issue, that's florage in scare quotes, or one of our easy clutter win ideas that we suggested. We would love to hear from our participants in Zoom or Facebook who picked some low-hanging fruit this week. Please let us know in the comments. YouTube viewer Pauline shared her tittle report in a comment. She says, I sorted out my stash of greeting cards and found 3 cards with no matching envelopes and no less than 70 envelopes, all sizes and colors, with no cards.
That's so funny, Pauline. How does that happen anyway? I know you're not giving away cards without an envelope, so where did all the extras come from? The crazy thing is, I've seen this a lot, the mismatch of the cards and the envelopes. I mean, it's a mystery with no answer, like why does the dryer eat the matching sock? So with an abundance of 70 extras, I think you're good to recycle some or donate some to someone's craft supplies. And let me just say, good job. It was a good low-hanging fruit project to tackle. And you got a big reduction reward for all of your efforts. You know, 70 envelopes takes up a lot of space. So you can certainly send them on their way and let them, you don't have to store them anymore.
Bella says, we just moved from NorCal to SoCal. Few boxes still around. We only have the essentials, but still overwhelming to unpack. Said we wouldn't buy anything, but of course we have already bought a king bed, and of course, king mattress protectors, king sheets.
All right. So if you just bought some stuff and you bought some new sheets, that means, you know, the new bed means that you need to go into the sheets collection and pull out the stuff for the bed that you don't have anymore. It's time to edit. So take the opportunity of I'm adding new sheets in. Therefore, I need to pull out and donate some old sheets. They need to go. Make that switch over, because now that you have brand new sheets and a brand new bed, you're not going to go get the old sheets out because they're old sheets. And so you're not going to get them out anymore. So, you know, maybe you keep, depending on how many new sheets you bought, if you bought a couple of changes, then I think you need to get rid of a whole bunch. If you only bought one set of sheets, then maybe you need to keep one of your existing ones and get rid of the rest. But use this as a prompt. I have new sheets. Therefore, I need to get rid of sheets and pillows and blankets. Now's the time. And good job.
M reports, I was surprised that much of my floor was covered with clothing. Egad, that's kindergarten stuff to hang up clothes. However, I learned that I need to make a place to change clothes easily and hang clothes that can be worn again.
Yes. We all have the theory that we wore it. We only wore it for a few hours. We wore it, but we didn't do anything. We wore it, but we didn't go outside, you know, whatever, so that they're still clean, right? And let me just tell you, August, walking around in August dissuades you of that for a while. You wear it, but it definitely is, smells like you wore it when you wear it in August. But yes, you do have, you need a couple of hooks, or you need a you know, a shelf that you put clothes on that you're going to wear again, or you need a section of the clothing rods that you can go in and hang stuff up when you are holding on, waiting to wear them again, and not have it be a huge quantity. Like at some point, you don't want to be putting everything you put on back in the closet to be worn again. And so be judicious about the choices that you make about what goes back up, and then make a little space for those things and hopefully get things off the floor.
Pat has her hand up, so I'm going to go ahead and ask Pat to unmute. Go ahead.
Yeah, I came up with a great solution to that. I have my clean clothes on the black felt hangers, and the ones that I've worn but can wear again, they're on turquoise hangers, and I have them in a certain spot in my closet. So when I'm looking for something to wear, I'll look there first. And then, you know, after a couple of washings, then it's time to a couple of wearings, it's time to wash them.
Right. But I like the visual cue of a different color or different type of hanger to say, these are the ones that have been worn once already, and the ones that are in black are fresh. Yeah. What a great idea. Yeah. Good job. I like it. Nice. Thank you for sharing.
Thank you.
That's another good use of keeping consistent types of hangers in the closet and making them mean something. If you know, if this color hanger means I've already worn it once, like, the great idea. Good tip. That's an excellent tip.
Teresa says, I went through all my pens and threw away a lot.
Isn't it surprising how many of them are dead in there? Good job.
Creative Planet Janet says, every time I notice that Ed has preferred pronouns, is there a story behind this? No, not really, except that when we started doing surveys, we had some ambiguous names and also names with pronunciations that were not obvious to us. So we put in questions about both of those things in our surveys, and I don't think I realized I had them in my description here. I don't know.
Right.
Just as a, you know, just so people don't have to wonder.
it's an aid. It's just it's just helpful data.
Fee reports, I cleared my sewing bags off the bedroom floor, two large bags, more space for dressing, but I still need to find a permanent home for the bags, temporarily in spare room.
Okay. And so if the bags are, if they're like permanent bags and this is how you want to store the stuff, then you can look at options to hang up those bags on hooks somewhere, inside a closet, on the back of a closet door, on a hook, on a hook on the wall somewhere. If that's how you like permanently take the sewing and travel with it around the house, or if you're taking the sewing and going out to go to a craft room or a sewing space, or to hang out with your friends and sew. And so if they're going to stay in those bags, then I would look at hooks. If they need to be installed as part of a craft supply for you, then looking at what kinds of stuff you're keeping and what would make it easy to get in and out of, and what would make it easy to store, stack, portable. Yes, I do carry them around. Okay. So then like I have a bead carrying case that just stays packed all the time, so that when it's time for me to go hang out with my friends, I just grab that bag and add in a current project and go off with it, because I'm always going to need a collection of stuff to go and hang out with my friends and bead. And so that just package just stays ready to go. And if you craft in community, like a lot of us do, you go to meetings, you go to meetups, you go hang out with your friends, so that you need to be able to have some portable version of your craft. And if the sewing stuff is in bags, then you just need a parking space for the bags. And bags, of course, have handles, and it makes it easy to hang them up and get them off the floor and get them out of the way. And you can, you know, hang them up on a hook behind a door, and they can be hidden too. So that's the handles of the bag makes it, the storage options easier, faster.
Okay. Brenda says, I cleaned out a cabinet and made room for canasta snacks, which were all over the counter. So ooh, nice.
Excellent.
So nice. I'm not sure it was a so nice or a so nice. It's hard right? to know. It's hard to know the inflection of chat comments sometimes.
Right. Exactly.
Connie says, I got started by necessity to sort out all the books belonging to our NGO, took photos and offered them for donation to members.
Oh, that's good. Good job. And so now you get to go through the process of intersecting all those books with all those people. Hopefully you can encourage them to take more than one. Yes, perhaps you want 10 instead of just one.
Right.
Please take 10.
Paula, she of the high altitude, says, I started another organizer's 5-day wardrobe challenge yesterday and tossed 2 pairs of shoes.
Excellent.
Now I'm down to 15 pairs where I'd like to stay.
That's a good number. And, you know, that's a number that you can manage on a typical shoe storage solution, whether it's some kind of rack or whether you're just putting them on the floor or whether you're putting them on shelves or whatever. 15 pairs is a manageable amount. And so good for you.
Mavis says, I went through my kitchen smalls and thinned the herd, to use Gail's phrase.
Yay! I love it. You guys like my words.
And we'll take one more. Tammy says, low fruit. I got rid of tons of ketchup, mayo, and salt packs, a medium plastic bin full. They're everywhere. I'll find more stashed in fridge as I clean it one day and now feel ready to set them free.
Awesome. That was a good job.
I felt fear of not having. I have a bottle of ketchup and mayo. They're clutter and probably expired.
Right. And so you want to use the fresh ones. And you can look in your fridge and confirm that you are not without mayo or ketchup. And so great for you to figure out that it was just a fear of being without and acknowledging that for yourself and then acknowledging the truth of it, which is you have plenty and you can let all the extras go. Good job. Okay. Always fun when you figure that out.
I lied. One more comment just because
it's so good.
It's so apt. Okay. Linda says, I probably took the low hanging fruit idea too literally, but I used the tittle as a prompt to sort the pantry and freezer and started eating my way through the food that will be out of date soon. So some of my low hanging fruit was actual fruit.
Good job. But we did suggest, you know, going through the pantry, the fridge, yeah, and the freezer as a way to clear out food. And so great job. And, you know, addressing the possibility of food waste. You know, I hate throwing away food. It just feels wrong in every possible way. And so, you know, great for you that you're acknowledging that there's food in there that needs to be dealt with. And you're putting that in front of the new stuff. And good job. I like it. Y'all did great today.
I think it's time for us to move on to our main topic.
Okay.
One obvious way to avoid a clutter problem or to get control of the one you already have is to stop accumulating stuff in the first place. By paying careful attention to our collecting habits, we can shift our behavior to hold back the flood tide of new clutter. Today, we're going to suggest simple and subtle behavioral changes that can make a big difference in your clutter landscape.
We're going to talk about the survey results because, man, you guys really brought it on the survey. Even though we were a little late publishing it this week, it seems to have really struck a chord with you guys because we got a tremendous response. And so you really made all the lists that we needed to talk about with your responses. So we're going to go through and do that. And let your responses trigger me to talk. So we asked our audience to complete the following statement. This was the first question that we asked in the survey. My clutter started to become a problem when fill in the blank. And a few of the respondents gave answers like when I was born, which is hilarious. And one frustrated person even said when I was conceived, which is a level of frustration that I can definitely hear in that response. But most of the answers to this question centered around a few aggravating factors or situations. So the first one that popped up in the survey a lot was major life changes. One of them was reaching the age of money, which I thought was a great way to phrase it. Diana shared, my clutter started to become a problem the moment I had money to buy things when I was a teenager. And I know all of us can relate to this moment. It's like, I have my own money. It's such a thrill when we get the autonomy of having our own money to spend. We can make our own choices and we don't have to negotiate with others for what we want. It then creates the moment when you realize all the things that you buy have to be managed. And sometimes that lesson is a little longer in the uptake. Like, we're really excited about having the money and spending it, but we don't think about the results of what we have to deal with after we start spending.
Right. Like, we hang out in that thrilled to be able to spend our money on whatever we want phase for 40 or 50 years.
And never quite go, oh yeah, there's an attached, habit that needs to be developed here. So I wanted to talk about tips as well. So in this space, you do have the ability to get what you want, but you also have the discernment to learn that buying things creates management issues. All that you bring home needs to be folded into the household. And the older you get, the tighter that squeeze is. You have to recognize, along with acquiring things, you have to add a process for managing those things. And you have to decide how much stuff you actually want to live with. So it's all well and good to get money and start buying things, but you're going to have to live with everything that you buy. And so adding in a thoughtful process about, hey, yes, I can buy it, but how much do I actually want to live with? And how do I want to manage the stuff that I live with? What effort do I want to put into keeping the things that I've spent my money on in good shape and keeping my place that I live, for which you pay rent or mortgage, by the way, to live there? How much you want to make that space be comfortable and soothing and relaxing and an oasis for you? And that's going to require some effort on your part. Now, spending money is easy and fun. Managing the household and the stuff is a chore. But the result of the chore is that you know where your stuff is and you live in a space that you find relaxing and appealing and restoring of your, mental health. So we want to add that thought process in. And I think that there is that sort of element of when you're a teenager, it's like, I can spend money. And somewhere along the way, you get used to that part and you don't ever go, oh yeah, yeah, but I gotta, you don't circle back and go, yeah, yeah, but I have to manage on the other end. Another situation that is a major life change is moving into your own place for the first time. And Evelyn said, I moved out from home and had my own job, money, and apartment. And of course, that is a recipe for clutter disaster, right? You finally realize all the things that your parents were doing to manage your life for you. No one's making sure that you get up or you're paying the bills or you're cleaning up behind yourself. This is the moment when all responsibility for your situation transfers to you. And it's sometimes a shock how much others were doing for you. This is a situation where I want my own apartment. Oh yeah, mom's not doing the laundry. You have to take over all of the responsibilities of management for yourself. And how well you do that directly impacts how you live your life, how you enjoy living your life, and how much comfort you live in. And you realize that all those things that your mother was running around doing in the house all the time, she was doing that so everybody was comfortable in the house. And she was doing it for herself and also for all of you guys too. And so you have to appreciate your mom for doing all that effort. And you have to recognize when you move into your own space for the first time that now the effort is yours. It's your turn. It's spending money requires no skills and no training, but spending money wisely requires thought, and it requires impulse management, and it requires planning. And handling bills and cleaning up requires skills that you need to cultivate, and you need to create a plan to tackle. And so I totally get, I moved into my first apartment and I have money and a job, and now I'm woohoo, I'm on my own. And then you have to go, oh yeah, that means I have to load the dishwasher, right? It's one of the things you have to take on as this new, in the new phase of your life. Peggy says, I was younger and thought I needed choices, in air quotes, she says, I needed choices in everything. I no longer believe this. One flavor of soap or one sheet set will do. Oh my gosh, getting out and living independently will lead us to explore our tastes and preferences for sure. And it's a double-edged sword though. Exploring your interests and preferences creates a trail of I tried it and I moved on from it stuff in your house. And that just seeds the clutter pile. So I get why buy one shirt when you can buy that same shirt that you love in 12 colors, but then you have to manage the 12 shirts that you bought. And so this is all, you know, effects and results of being able to purchase and being able to start shopping. Knowing that you can make a whole bunch of choices doesn't mean that you have to choose all of them. It's what I'm saying. There's some point where you have to recognize, yes, I could buy everything in the store, but then I would have to take it all home and deal with it. And so you can look at your collections and go, I've been buying here for a long time, and perhaps I should stop buying makeup and go back and use the makeup that I have before I start spending more money on new choices of makeup just because they put out more products. I think that's the biggest thing.
This one really resonated with me. I think we talked before about there's a book and a TED talk by a researcher by the name of Barry Schwartz. And it's called The Paradox of Choice. And he discusses, I highly, highly recommend the TED talk. He discusses how having many, many, many choices can be as limiting and paralyzing for people as having no choices at all or too few choices. And I think we come to sort of associate choice with luxury or comfort.
Or freedom.
And so we get the, you know, six different kinds of flavored coffees that clutter up the cabinet, or the, you know, many, many, many kinds of snacks. And I have to consciously remind myself, I'm only going to eat one snack at a time. So maybe this week it'll just be the baked potato chips.
Right.
It doesn't have to be all the kinds of snacks I like every time I shop, you know, and it doesn't have to be six flavors of body wash every time I go to
replace the body wash. Right.
Wait, is Bed Bath, has Bed Bath gone belly up? They have, right?
I think mostly.
Yeah. What's the other one? Oh, Bath and Body Works.
Yeah.
That's the one I was thinking. Yeah. Yeah. So I really like that. I really like that answer.
Well, and you know, food in particular is something that we love having the choices, but you can only eat so much food in a day. If you don't want to be the size of an elephant, you can't eat all of the choices that are interesting to you every moment. And so recognizing that one person can only consume so much food before it starts to spoil or go bad. You know, maybe your choice isn't every time I go to a snack, I get to choose from these 10. Maybe it's this week I'm going to snack on A or B. And next week when I go to the grocery store, I'm going to snack on C and D. Like, you can have the variety, but you just can't have it all at once because A, you don't have places to put all the choices, and B, you're not going to be able to eat it all before it starts to die. Or if you do, you're going to be having weight management issues on the other end. I have to be very careful about what I put in the fridge when I go shopping, because if I buy a whole lot of fresh food, there's not enough meals for me to eat it fast enough to not have to throw stuff away on the other end. So it becomes a management of spreading out your choices over a time frame instead of lining up all your choices for any time you think about it.
Yeah.
Because that creates a volume that is very difficult to manage. And yeah, you may have to pick, you know, you may have to drink mocha flavored coffee for a few more days than you would have liked until you get through it. But then when you go to the store, you can buy something else and it'll be okay. Right.
Yeah. And you can also, you know, you can look forward to the change. You can look forward to the fresh option.
Right.
If you only have your bottle of lavender shampoo.
Right.
when, you know, while you're working your way through that one, you can be thinking about next time I would like the rosemary and mint.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. And if you're using the one choice that you got and you're using it up, then you don't have a huge bunch of stuff to manage, and you don't end up with a bunch of half bottles of stuff that you've tried and discarded. And, you know, I have been in the shower using a soap that's like, man, I really want to be done with this soap. Like, this flavor was not my favorite, but I'm not throwing it away. So I'm using it until it's gone, and then I'll get to go and buy something super fabulous. And this is the benefit of being a grown-up. I saw the word delayed gratification flash by on the chat there. This is the benefit of being a grown-up. Like, you can imagine in the future and delay your gratification until it's time to go get the next soap. And a little kid has a much harder time. When you're little, you know, you want it now, you want it now. And you can't really hold on to the idea of, I'm dealing with this so that I can have that later. But that's the benefit of being a grown-up, is that you can manage yourself and deal with processing one while delaying gratification for the next. If you have to have two, fine, have two. But then it just means that it'll take you longer to get to the next time you get to shops.
Yeah, just don't add so many choices to your repertoire that it's a storage issue, it's a cleaning issue, it's a knocking things down issue.
It's a spoiling issue.
Yeah. Yeah. Find your happy medium, your right. threshold.
Right. And live your life of choice and your life of possibilities stretched out over time instead of in the immediate moment. You don't have to have all the choices right now. You can experience those choices stretched out over time. And still have choices and differences in your life. Thank you. We will let that one go now.
Right. Go ahead.
Another clutter creator that we got this response in the survey was having children. And for every parent everywhere, enough said, having kids explodes the amount of stuff in the house, and it drains away all the energy that you have to deal with things because you spend all your energy focusing on the kids. And so, this is one where having a plan to manage the kids' stuff when they're little, having a plan early on, like if you can adopt as a parent with young children, if you can adopt a way to process things on a regular basis and making things go in and out for the kids and doing it for yourself, you are just being kind to your future self when the kids leave the house. And they leave the chaos behind for you to deal with. And so if you can, A, create a process for dealing with it as it happens, and then enrolling the kids and helping you deal with it as it happens, then at least they help you give up the things that are not going to stay. And they put a little bit of the effort into it over their 20 years of their living with you. And then you have less chaos on the back end, you know, two decades from now when they move out and take a very small amount of stuff with them, and they leave a bunch of stuff behind that they don't want to take with them because you're the storage unit. So just be looking forward to that and trying to make sure that there isn't a bunch of stuff for them to leave behind.
I have a fun story on this topic. I ran into a neighbor the other day as I was walking the dog and she was leaving the neighborhood, and she said her 3-year-old, who was in the back of the car, was mad at her at the moment.
Oh.
Because she told him that it was time to let go of some of his artwork.
Oh.
You know, he's got an endless supply of artwork that he's done, and he wants to keep it all. And she said how she told me how she'd very calmly explained to him that you can't keep it all. There's too much of it. And so you have to just pick some of your favorites. And I applauded her because I think 3 years old is not too soon to start teaching a child a realistic attitude about the stuff.
And things need to be going out. And, you know, yeah, he's going to be mad about it now, but he's three. So he's not going to remember a lot of it. he'll remember it in the moment, but you know, 15 years from now, he's not going to remember it very much. And in the meantime, she's teaching him, she's starting to teach him the concept of the limitations, the finite limitations of the box. And of course, he doesn't come wired with that information already. Like, you got to introduce it to him. And so she's doing it, and great. And if she keeps returning to that theme, okay, now we have a whole bunch of stuffed toys and there's more than we can store. And so now you get to pick your favorites. Now, it's hard to ask a three-year-old to pick their favorites.
Right. Yeah.
And so because too many choices will paralyze a child much faster than an adult. So she might pre-sort some of them and say, you know, here's, I think these are my favorites. Do you agree? You know, maybe do some of the pre-sorted a little bit for the kid in advance, and show him one at a time, you know, and
yeah. Keep it age appropriate.
Make it so that, you know, his little brain doesn't shut down trying to make evaluative choices among 50 pieces. But, you know, you can go through and say, these are the ones that, these are the ones that are, I think we have better choices than these here. And these are the ones I'm going to recycle. And we kept all these ones that I think are really great. And I hope that you like these too, or, you know, something along that line.
Yeah. Em had a good suggestion too, which was, she said, you can ask a three-year-old who would enjoy getting certain pieces of art. Would you like to give this to grandma?
Oh, awesome. And then they can just subtly disappear. Right. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Grandma can make them disappear on the other end. Sometimes you got to do that. Right.
Right.
Okay. So another area of clutter building was when your life or the life of your kids gets more complex. So we had an anonymous user who suggested, when I started to have school projects like term papers, or I had to study for tests. So totally relate to that. Major projects take up all of your focus, and cleaning up behind yourself is one of the things that goes by the wayside in that moment, along with getting enough sleep and eating well, et cetera. It's one of the ways that all self-care kind of slides off the cliff. You stop managing your environment for lack of time, and you end up impacting your focus with the chaos that's created because you don't have time to manage your environment. So it definitely, if you have to focus on something like, I'm writing a term paper, I need to study for a test, and you ignore everything else around you, you sort of start creating chaos that way. And eventually the chaos is going to get in your face. It's going to be a problem anyway. But that's part of experiencing that shift in focus and recognizing that studying for doing the project or studying for the test is temporary, and that all of the things that you put on pause while you do that, you need to circle back and pick up when the test is over, when the project is complete. Then you have to clean up behind yourself, and cleaning up the project is also cleaning up all the clothes that you threw down, and all the food that you left laying around, and all the trash that you made, and all the other things that I didn't process the mail for a week because I was working on this project, whatever. All those things that get put on pause while you work on a project. Part of dealing with the project is, when the project's done, you go behind and spend some time, allocate some time to clean up behind yourself and undo the impact that focusing solely on the project had on your environment. We don't do that cleanup part well. It's one of the things that we don't think about and we don't make plans for. So this is a perfect example of when you need to have that plan. Example of having your life getting complex was from Darby. And she said, my daughter became old enough to do arts and crafts, especially anything with scissors or stickers. And I want to add or glue or glitter onto that list. I'm sure that became part of it too. There's nothing like the unbridled creativity of a child who has no judgment of themselves or their work to make an arts and crafts explosion of materials, trash, and final products to manage. Arts and crafts, lots of fun. It creates a mess. And again, this is one of those situations where you have to circle back and clean up after the mess. And, you know, sometimes it's mom, and sometimes, you know, if the daughter just became old enough, you can probably get her to do part of it, but she's probably not going to be as thorough as you want. And so setting a, okay, creativity is stopping now. We need to go on to the next thing, and we need to stop and clean up ourselves is another teaching moment for her about when you have this fun and it's, you're doing all this creating and you get something really fabulous at the other end. And then we have to stop and spend 15 minutes cleaning up and putting things away so that it's ready to go when you want to come and do it again. We all have that cleanup issue on the other end that we're tired and it was so much fun. And the cleanup part isn't fun, but it is a necessary part of the clutter management in the house. Another thing that creates clutter in the house, another change, is a career change. Blue Jay says, I closed an office space almost as big as my flat, and all the stuff came into my home when she closed the office space, is the implication. I'm sure that wasn't the plan when you went into that office. You were furnishing a second space with a reason. You were creating an office. And so it was a separate, location, and it, you furnished it so that you could use it. But wedging all of those contents into your house created total chaos the minute that you did it, I'm sure. So this is one where we make a change. We decide that we need to close and merge something, but we don't do it with much of a plan. We don't stop and think about it in advance. If I take all of the furniture in the office and bring it to my house, what am I going to do? Where is it going to go? I can't possibly make that work. So I need an alternate plan about where all this stuff can go. Or maybe some of the things that I got for the office, I like better than some of the things in the house. And so I can bring some of those in and take something in the house out in order to make it work. So doing that merger, acknowledging that, adding in bulk from one place to another requires a plan. It requires a thought. It requires you to think about, I don't have a lot of space in my home. I don't have a whole bunch of empty rooms waiting to receive stuff. So in order to make this work, I really need to think about how much of it actually needs to come to my house or what can leave my house in order for this new stuff to come in. And particularly around furniture, right? Like furniture has such a footprint. And so make a plan. People do this all the time. They say, the storage unit is costing me too much money. I'm going to bring everything from the storage unit to the house. Oh no, it's in the storage unit for a reason. It's in there because you can't fit it in your house. So now's the time to not move it all into the house, but go through it all and make all those decisions about it need to go. It needs to go. Okay. So divorce or separation. I want to read this one because I thought it was very interesting. We had an anonymous person say, when my husband and I separated, this is an interesting question and that I had never thought about, when did the problem really start? It's a great insight for me to consider moving forward. Why do I leave the dishes? Because it was never appreciated when they were done. And it seemed like there was always something that wasn't done quite right when they were finished. So she developed a habit of leaving the dishes because she was feeling unappreciated. The work that she did to deal with the dishes was maybe criticized and she was feeling unappreciated about it. And so her response was to not do it. And we certainly develop those habits in response to the people that we live with. And if you feel unappreciated and give up on the dishes in response, okay, I see how you got there. But now that you're separated, the only person that's being impacted by ignoring the dishes is you. And so that's one of those major changes where whatever precipitated the change, now you can reevaluate how you interact with the stuff and how you take care of the space that you are the person that is living in.
This question got so many great answers that in retrospect, I'm thinking this could have been the theme, just the one and only theme of the top of the episode,
right.
This question. And I, to anyone who didn't answer the survey or who's, watching the video later or listening to the podcast, I want to encourage all of you to ask yourself this question: when did my clutter start? Or when did my clutter get much worse?
Out of control. Yeah. When did it become noticeable or difficult to manage?
I think a lot of people really got something out of their answers to this question. It was really interesting.
Yeah, you can tell by the way that they answered that it was like, oh, I hadn't thought about it that way. I hadn't considered the answer to that question yet.
Just list off the remaining answers we got
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
And
so
we'll move on to the next question.
One of them was adding a new member to your household. There's all kinds of reasons why you do that. And merging households is one of those things that people do it without a plan. So it's definitely one that requires you to think about how to merge the households before you do it. Health and mobility issues. If you start having health issues or you start having mobility issues, it makes it very difficult to deal with clutter. Receiving an inheritance, meaning that you inherited the contents of somebody's house or life. And that creates a huge clutter problem immediately for anybody that inherits a bunch of stuff they have to manage. And sometimes it's several things at once, multiple life changes that pile up in a short period. I want to read this quote. We had too many transitions in 1 year, mom in hospice, dad in apartment, kids in college and starting out on their own, and a new hubby who is a collector. And I have to say, when I read that list, I was like, oh, I can see the backwash of clutter piling up immediately in my mind. Like I have a vision of what happened when all those things happened in the same year.
That was from Lisa Beth, who's
yes, Lisa Beth,
with
yes.
us today.
Oh, hi, Lisa Beth. There's also trauma. The death of a loved one is a really big trigger for a lot of people. Blue Jay posted when my best friend died. Grief stops everything. And that's one of those moments where you really don't have the energy to deal with things while you try to deal with a loss. And the only way that you're going to get back to it is to feel the grief, process and absorb that loss, integrate that loss as best you can to be able to get back to more capacity to deal with the other things in your life. But death of a loved one will do it to you every time. Okay, we have another question that we asked was, name the collections or categories of stuff in your home that are typically most likely to become cluttered. And some of the most frequent responses were craft and hobby supplies, of course, mail, magazines, bills, medical paperwork, receipts, handwritten notes. In other words, paper, anything. And Peggy says, papers, they take so long to go through for such little visible result. That is correct. Pantry items, dry and canned goods and spices. That was on the list of collectibles. Clothes, shoes, children's toys. Helen says, my daughter's an avid collector and I don't want to take that joy from her, but equally, I want to teach her that you can't have all the things. Currently, we have a rule. If she gets a new cuddly toy, she has to let go of an old one, even if this is causing her pain. And last year we had tears in the toy shop when she decided to not buy a toy she wanted because she wasn't willing to let go of an old one. Oh, but good lesson for her to learn. Like, yeah, we got to have space for them. Office supplies. We've talked about office supplies a million times, right? Everybody has office supplies. And what in the world are they for? And why do we have so many? Because we don't need them. All of those collections, all of those categories of stuff are typical collections. Okay, the third question, and I wanted to run through these. Finally, we asked our audience to describe a habit or routine behavior that you'd like to cultivate or eliminate to help get a better handle on household clutter. And so some of our favorite responses, one was from Sarah. She says, I would like to cultivate the ability to see in air quotes, to see clutter. I don't have goat trails or anything similar, but I have something close to where it belongs to put it, but I put something close to where it belongs to put away later. And I just don't see it anymore. My clutter becomes landscape. So you're describing a shift in focus here. As you put something down and you move on past it, you stop focusing on it. And so the tip that I want to offer here is if you really want to see the clutter again, and you typically check out after you put it down, then you want to go to a space or a room that you want and stop in that room and consciously focus on the content. So stand there and don't try to do anything. Just stand there and look around the room like you haven't been in there before. Notice things without moving around to deal with them. You don't want to like go, oh, I see that, and start moving. You just want to stand there and look around your whole landscape. What do you see? What's there that shouldn't be? What looks incomplete or it looks disheveled to you? And then make a list and make a plan to tackle those areas. But make the list while you're standing there observing everything very closely, while you're in the moment looking at all of the stuff, because that's how you get a good list. And then you don't have to figure it out again later. You can just follow the list to reclaim the room. But for people whose focus, that sort of out of sight, out of mind mindset, where if you put it down and you walk away, it erases from your brain.
It's not even out of sight, out of mind. It's stayed still too long, out of mind.
right. You know? It stopped moving. So we don't notice it anymore,
It's not in my hands. So it's out of mind.
Right. Exactly. It's exactly right. So if that's your sort of natural way of functioning, then you need to give yourself that moment of being in the present and standing there and looking at a space with fresh eyes and with full attention and focus, and give yourself, 10 minutes to stare at the room and see all of the things that are there and notice them, take them in and go, oh, look, I put a whole bunch of stuff on top of that bed. Or, oh, look, there's a bunch of stuff in that chair. Or, oh, I added some things on the floor there. And so you can reacquaint yourself with all the places that you left things, and then make a list or take a picture. You can take a picture of it and maybe look at the picture more, study the picture later. Give yourself a plan.
M said, observing a room via a photo of it works well for me because it removes some of the emotions involved with the stuff.
Oh, I like that. That's great.
And Ginger said something somewhere. I take panoramic pictures of a room, then sit with it and pick it apart. Arm's length perspective.
Excellent. And you can sit down. Right. You can go sit in your comfy chair and get out your list and, look at the picture and make some notes. You just have to acknowledge that focus isn't your strong suit. And so in order to see the things that have become landscape, you need to stop and be in the present and look at at the space that you want to tackle and get fresh with it, get updated with it and see everything again. And that just takes standing there and being focused for a minute. And it's, it's what I do when I go into clients' houses. I go in and stand there and look at the room, and I'm basically cataloging choke points and cabinets I need to open, and here's that pile and what's that stuff over there. I'm scanning the room to see what I have to deal with. And you can do the same in order to imagine that it's, pretend you're a client and you're going to go help somebody else and go stare at that room and see what's in there that needs to be dealt with. Jetta's new habit that she wishes for: I will deal with paper, file shred, etc. each day instead of letting it sit for days. I think that's a very aspirational goal, handling it every day. And you might want to modify that goal a little bit to maybe handle it 5 days a week and be off on the weekends, or you could do it every other day or twice a week. The more days you commit to doing, the more you get done. But I just have a question about whether that feels like relief to have the same chore every day, so there's no question about it, like, it's on your list of things to do every day. Or that feels like a burden because any missed day where you don't do it then feels like a failure. So you want to set it up for your success and your win. If having the habit, having the chore on the list every day, I handle the paper every day, makes it easy for you because you're going to do it every day and you don't have to think about it, you're just going to do it every day, then great. And if it feels like, I said I'm going to do it 7 days a week, but and that's really nonstop, and then if I miss one, I'm sad or I am beating myself up, then, modify the goal a little bit to give yourself a day off.
Allow yourself a cheat day, as they
right?
call it.
Right, exactly.
The diet or workout world.
A paper cheat day.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, exactly.
Don't create a game for yourself that's so hard that you can't win it.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. You want to be able to win, and whatever that looks like for you. And once you could get caught up, dealing with a paper every day really becomes pretty quick. Like, it's not like, you're not getting 150 pieces of mail every day. You're getting 20 or 10 or, 25. And so it's a little bit easier to deal with every day than you think if you just stop and give yourself that 5 minutes of attention on the objects. So managing the current inflow can be a habit that is easy to cultivate. Tackling a paper project that is a backlog of paper, that's a different goal. So this goal of I'll deal with paper every day instead of letting it sit for days is how I deal with my current incoming paper. That's the habit for the current incoming paper. And how I deal with the paper that's already here that I've been ignoring, that's a project that you get to plan separately. So it's a different task list. It's a different technique to tackle it. And, you know, you need to be doing this current everyday paper habit in addition to whatever you have to do to handle the backlog. Yeah. And Sharon says, I'll set a time each week to take care of the week's mail. So for her, it's a once a week thing that she wants to deal with it. Okay. That's cool. So maybe your 5 minutes is going to take 20 or 30 minutes to get it done. But if you have a set time for it and you're cool with that, then you can stay on top of your current mail too. Peggy says, I would like to stay on top of digital as well as paper clutter, but first I need to get a handle on the backlog. Well, and this is why I was talking about backlog. Handling the habit to handle what is incoming every day, what's the fresh new deliveries, whether that's physical or digital, is one habit. And the process of dealing with the backlog is a different habit. Because if you start with the backlog without a habit for the new stuff, you're over there working on the backlog and the new stuff is coming in and creating more backlog. So you have to create a habit to deal with what's incoming first and be doing that, and then make a plan to go and deal with the backlog on the back end. Yeah, so that the backlog stops accumulating.
We've talked about that several times before, but I think it's worth just reminding that any clutter situation, not just paper, but any any situation you have in your home where there's a backlog and you're also still adding to it. So, you know, like having a huge collection of clothing or shoes can be the same kind of a problem. It's useful to think of it as two things. There is a project to take care of the backlog, and there's a habit or behavior, set of habits to address the ongoing problem.
Yeah, the incoming and whatever's incoming, how to modify what's incoming, how, you know, around clothes, for instance, it's how much am I going to go shopping? How often do I need to do that? How, when I add new things, am I going to take out old things to replace? No, I'm going to put something in. That means I have to take something out and I have to go make a donation. Like having those habits for the new stuff is still necessary on any project. So new habit, project backlog, plan. Got to have both of those things on anything you're going to tackle. New Mexico Mama says, I will clean up a current project as soon as I'm done, so I have a clean service, begin the new one. Yes, ma'am. Congratulations for acknowledging that is a necessary statement. And you got to clean up in the kitchen after you cook. You got to clean up the arts and crafts after you're finished. You got to clean up in the bathroom when you finish putting your makeup on and getting dressed. Like everything in there is something that every project has an end. And it has the shrapnel to deal with after the project is done. And so even when I'm decluttering at the end of a client appointment, I stop and put stuff away. Like I've gotten out their scissors and I've picked up their something to clean with. And I got the rag out and I, you know, made some piles. And so when I stop at someone's house, I go put the scissors back and I go put the cleaning materials back and I go put the, you know, the state of the project with notes and I go, you know, park them somewhere where they're out of the way, or I create, you know, I've created a container to put them in and I put them away. That cleanup has to happen for everybody every time in order to have a clean space to start again. And yeah, you know, there's people that for which cleaning up is joy. And there's the rest of us that think cleaning up is an annoyance, but it is necessary. It is supportive of keeping your space clutter-free, chaos-free, if you clean up behind yourself.
Okay. We have all kinds of great comments and questions in the chat that we are not going to be able to get to during the recorded part of today's show. So stick around. If you're in Zoom, stick around with us after we sign off, and we'll try to get to some more of those.
We'll catch you up.
But we need to talk about next week, among other things.
And the tittle.
Yeah. So let's see. Let's talk about next week. Do you ever feel as if you're shouting into the void about your clutter problems? But you're not. We're always ready to listen, and we're ready to tackle the tough questions and topics that are giving you fits. Next week, we're going to answer viewer and listener questions and address short topic suggestions that we've been saving up for a while. join us on August 22nd at the usual time, noon US Central Time, for Ask Us Anything, viewer and listener questions and orphan topics.
It's Gail been a while. So
yeah, and Gail and I, like every week we look through, or every time we do a survey, we look through your topic suggestions, and some of them are very specific, so we can't like turn them into a whole episode. Mm-hmm. And so we're going to tackle at least a few of those little ones, smaller questions that aren't a whole episode's worth. Why don't you give us the tittle?
Okay, the tittle this week is Stem the Flow. This week's assignment is to slow down or shut down one of your ongoing sources of clutter. So first, identify an area of the home or a category or a collection of stuff that suffers from chronic clutter. For example, the entryway. Now reflect on the circumstances or the situations that lead to the clutter in this space or this category, as well as the conditions or people that contribute to it. So you can write some brief statements describing a few situations or circumstances. For example, I take off my shoes when I enter the house and I never seem to circle back to put them away. So you're describing this is happening in the entryway and this is why it's happening. Now for each statement that you wrote down, write a resolution or an affirmation that encapsulates a habit you'd like to cultivate or eliminate. For example, I will go straight to the bedroom when I arrive home and put my shoes in the rack in the closet. And I would continue that sentence instead of taking my shoes off in the entryway. Just keep them on for another 3 minutes, walk the rest of the way to the closet and take them off in there. And, you know, then your household slippers are probably in there. You can put some comfy shoes on or some slippers if you want to come back out of the closet. And so find the area, describe it to yourself, write down the situations that are affecting it, and then write a statement about what kind of habit you'd like to cultivate to address it. And then come back and tell us how it went.
If you're watching this on YouTube, we would love for you to join us live. To get notifications about upcoming events, we invite you to join the meetup group by visiting cfhou.com/meetup. You can also follow us on Facebook by visiting cfhou.com/Facebook or join our mailing list by visiting cfhou.com/subscribe. We love to hear from you, so please keep your comments, questions, and topic suggestions coming on YouTube, Facebook, or anywhere that you find us. You can always reach us through our website at clutterfairhouston.com.
Thanks for joining us today. I hope that you heard from your fellow participants that you guys are not, no one's suffering alone. And we hope that we gave you some tips today that you found useful. And we will look forward to seeing you next week. Thanks so much.
Bye-bye.
Bye.